Hello and a very warm welcome to Perspectives, our program that reports the issues from the viewpoints of our correspondents. I am Kingsley Obinchere. In this edition, the newsreader's headache in an era of change, the slip of tongue that sounds like a bomb, a shaman, where the world can be found, and the stereotypes. And also, when teacher KB was sent to the spiritual court, matters of invisible things. Please be our guest. And now to the stories. When it happens, newsreaders feel like entering the ground and vanishing, but it is an occupational hazard. After the change of government, newsreaders have to adjust to mentioning new personalities attached to some posts. As an example, it was a battle for many who had always mentioned the longest-serving finance minister, then Dr. Kwesi Bochi, to change to his successor. But for many others, it is not just mentioning the wrong name after the change of government, but a tag that you are given because of a genuine slip. People in the industry laugh it off, but it is not so with others. After returning to the newsroom after a long period as a presidential correspondent Pascaline Adadevo was faced with the challenge of removing what has registered in the subconscious and training the tongue to mention what the eyes see in the bulletin. She shares the experience with us.
After more than 7 years at the presidency as a correspondent, I am back to the newsroom to continue to do what I had done before: editing, producing, interviewing, research, news presentation, and what have you. It feels good taking a break from all the pressures as a presidential correspondent. I have shared my experiences with you all a couple of times, and I am not about going over it again. My colleagues and friends tell me I am putting on weight, and I only giggle, if only they knew. Having come back to newsroom, I find myself back on air, not reading my reports this time, but news. And even as I struggle to meet the standards of the Radio Ghana News style of talking the script after years of not doing mainstream reading, I also face some other challenges. Critical amongst them is the tendency to mention President Mahama instead of President Akufo-Addo. Don't ask me how that is possible. It happens anyway. In my mind, I think familiarity plays the major role. Imagine having worked closely with a personality for more than a year and whose name is never absent in any of your reportage. Once I mention president, the next word or noun I am used to calling is Mahama. That is what is registered in my subconscious mind. Now, President Akufo-Addo is the new president and the mind must adjust. The first time it happened was during an 18-hour bulletin, and I had boldly mentioned President Mahama. Everyone in the studio, including the technician, froze. "What?" was what I saw written on their faces. In my own ears, it sounded like a bang. I quickly reorganized, apologized with a sincerest curtsy. "I beg your pardon," and went back to take the sentence, this time stressing on President Akufo-Addo. After the bulletin, we all laughed, but I said to myself, how many people will understand it is a genuine mistake and not judge me? How many will say, we said it, she's an NDC girl? Well, subsequently, all those who listened teased me after the bulletin, and after days, some told me of how similar mistakes had happened a number of times to some readers, even on TV. My current head of news, Ter Kitcher, who covered former President Rawlings as a correspondent in the 1990s, told me how he also went on air to mention former President Jerry John Rawlings instead of John Ejekum Kufuor. Another senior reader told me how she also mentioned President Kufuor on air instead of President Akufo-Addo. After that incident, which I choose to call the baptism of fire, people have told me how they have observed how carefully and slowly I mentioned President Akufo-Addo in the bulletins, all in a bid not to repeat that same mistake. In fact, not only am I careful, I open my eyes widely and alert so I get it right. It is just a matter of time and I'll get used to doing it right. As funny as these may seem, it remains a mystery how these slips happen. You can only be a reader to understand. Now, all these, there are a group of people who will always tag you anyway to whichever regime you might have covered as a correspondent. What probably they do not know is that the state media would always put their best foot forward by assigning someone who will be able to file the best of reports in record time and also be able to endure the rough schedule. Political affiliations are therefore secondary. This brings the issue of the need for media houses to groom reporters to do specialized reporting. For instance, a journalist must be an all-rounder, but most importantly, he or she must have a specific area of interest like political, science and environment, health, women and children, and court reporting. It shouldn't be the case of jack-of-all-trades and master-of-none. The lifeblood of any media organization should be specialized reporters. It is said, a journalist is as good as the list of his or her contacts. The networking is what will give the newsroom the exclusive stories. Many years of specialization is what will make the journalist an institution and a force to reckon with. In all these, specializing in political reporting seems to be the most sought after. In Ghana, for instance, we have the likes of Kweku Bahakum, who has an enviable knowledge of the country's political history and has documents to support his arguments, Kwesi Pratt, and indeed a few others. Going forward, I think reporters who are assigned to certain critical locations like the presidency, parliament, and the court are retained to enable them to become an authority in that area so as to be able to mentor upcoming journalists. The White House Press Corps, for instance, have very core reporters who have seen two or more regimes, and over the period, they have established very close relations with the presidency. The roller coaster attitude of changing reporters as and when there is a regime change only goes to deepen the partisanship tag and also rob them of the experiences built over the period. Politicians must know that a journalist has a core mandate. The line between neutrality and objectivity must be drawn. In my view, neutrality does not mean a journalist must not have an opinion. Once a journalist, just like other citizens, vote in elections to decide on who must lead them, they have the right to belong to any political party of their choice. Debatable as this may be, in professional work, objective and balanced reportage is the way to go. In journalism, objectivity must encompass fairness, balance, facts, and non-partisanship. What the profession enjoins the journalist to do is for him or her to present the facts, whether or not they like or agree with those facts, and letting their audiences interpret them on their own. The most important thing to remember about politics is that it involves people, the politician who makes decisions, the public servant who carries out the orders, and the people affected by their actions. The journalist is to serve the people affected by explaining how the decisions will affect their lives. Simpliciter. For Perspectives, I am Pascaline Adadevo.
What can we put it down to? The experts will call it stereotypic generalization and will go on to explain that it is not always positive. This is where we group people together based on where they come from and quickly assign them a tag. Almost every ethnic group in Ghana has one. Often, the description fails to take into cognizance the individual character traits. For some areas, the mere mention is enough to paint pictures in the mind of others. Inner city inhabitants always have their tag, violent, ready to sort things out with their fists or any handy weapon. Some groups are described with the tag of being perpetually cantankerous, and it seems to follow them everywhere, even though it may not be true. Some who never knew where such ones came from jump to the "that's why" conclusion the moment they are told, and they begin to reevaluate them in a way as to fit them under the tag. What comes to mind when you hear that someone comes from a shaman? You might have reached a conclusion before you began a reassessment. Background matters, but are we hastily condemning others and depriving them of opportunities because of where they come from? Discrimination is the result. While some are denied jobs, others even have to move around under the rowdy tag. Correspondent Justice Ametepe has been cogitating over the issue and takes us through his thoughts in this item pushing to the fore all of the repeated epithets that seem not to be the real situation in a lot of instances.
Sincerely, I am excited. I am excited not because I have found a new way of making wealth. My excitement stems from the peace and serenity that has found its way into the belly of a shaman. Unlike the past when notoriety was blatantly displayed in the adolescent stage of a shaman and how dark situations like social deviance surrounding the town was, a shaman is now calm. I have heard how innocent blood was shed on the altar of people wanting to feed themselves, thereby taking to people's homes to rob them of their joy. I have also heard about the famous Ashaman armed robbery school in the early 90s that, according to rumors, trained and dispatched robbers across the country. I have even heard that machete wounds were inflicted on young men who visited a shaman in a bid to test their strength and resilience. However, all have turned out to be nothing but a myth. When I was told that some of my family members domiciled in a shaman, I thought they had a well-formed body with metallic feet that can overcome even an injury. I imagine how unbeatable they would be. In fact, I thought of how brave they were and hoped of meeting them one day, after which I would also exhibit the strength of a man. I thought it was only men made of men that lived in a shaman. To some extent, the tag of bravery and unruliness that was touted with the aim of defaming a shaman has served as immunity for anybody from a shaman. However, the adverse repercussions were enormous. People who live outside a shaman have always believed that when you touch one a shaman person, you have touched multitudes of macho men. Is that not beautiful? That is why a small boy could walk boldly to an adult saying in a manly voice, "Let's share the food." You don't want to mention the stigma that people have suffered as a result of their being resident in a shaman. Most people from a shaman have been denied official job opportunities, which they equally qualify, and have been pushed to the back seat. Even some students have suffered embarrassment in schools that are supposed to treat them equally because they come from a shaman. People who got what they duly deserved have had to fake their identity or have mentioned that they come from Tema, which is a nearby metropolis. Not until I came to a shaman, I thought it was actually a den for criminals who showed weird characteristics. But I've come to learn one thing. A shaman is a place for survivors. I am not trying to belabor the fact that there are social vices. Just like rain, social vices are everywhere. Thieves and pickpockets are everywhere too, except that some have devised strategies to steal with books and pens. There are great people that have lived part of their lives and have been nurtured in a shaman. These people have shown great prowess and dexterity in line of their duty, law-abiding and discipline. Some great musicians, academicians, entrepreneurs and others have emerged from a shaman and have done greatly on the international front. I mean, these majority of hard-working and devoted men who have contributed massively to this country have a bit of their training from a shaman. May I brief you on a shaman and the demography of the city that has constantly been referred to as West Africa of Accra? A shaman covers a total land area of 45 square kilometers. Its proximity to Tema and Accra makes it easy for community members to have access to high-level social facilities and infrastructure such as good roads, water, hospitals and electricity. It also serves as a dormitory town for workers in most industries in the Tema township. Historically, a shaman was founded by one Ni Amui, who migrated to the area from Tema in the 17th century. Later, other migrants from the Accra Metropolitan Assembly area to the east of Tema came to settle in a shaman. The area where they settled is present-day Lebanon, a suburb of a shaman. Evers from the Volta region are among the earliest migrants who settled in the area. Currently, a shaman is now a cosmopolitan and home to people from many ethnic groups. The major ethnic groups include Gadangbe, Ewe, Guans, Hausa, Dagomba, Asante, Fante, among others. Even other nationals like Nigerians, Yemenis, and people from Niger are found in a shaman. I bet you should understand why there were pockets of violence in the early 90s in a shaman. A homogeneous community with different people of different understanding may not live as peacefully as people of a shaman have been currently. when a man from Ashaman yells at his colleague, "Your mother," just consider it as a play. It is our beautiful way of reminding ourselves that the first woman in our lives deserves some attention. My good listener, do not be dismayed by what you see at places like East Legon, Trasaco, and other places. Ashaman equally have beautiful places. I mean, the wooden structures you see just at the entry of Ashaman is not what the city is made up of. Maybe one of these days, you should embark on a trip to Ashaman. Have you forgotten that you could access some developed countries through Ashaman? Well, there are towns like Lebanon, Washington, New York, Jerusalem, Jericho, and others. I am on this piece trying to say Ashaman is not as rowdy as has been described. Just come to China Agba, where the main market is, and you will see how bustling the city is. The last time I counted, there were 13 banks. So, I ask, how come these banks and businesses have sprung up when issues of security have been said not to be right in Ashaman? Your guess is as good as mine.
Justice Ametepe filed that report. You are listening to Perspectives, a program that reports the issues from the viewpoints of our correspondents. And Perspectives is also available as podcast on GBC Online. All you need to do is to log on to gbcghana.com. gbcghana.com, and you check podcast and you have some of our editions. Moving on to the next story. Do things happen in the spirit realm that quickly manifest to others later? This is always a debate when a court is compelled to disregard seeming evidence of things beyond the normal. However, the mere fact that the devil exists and people of faith believe that the Creator works in their behalf in mysterious ways is enough proof that many things that cannot be explained are still possible. The securocrat Kofi Bentum Kwansin, writing about the little wonders in life in his book Things Visible and Invisible, recounts a variety of things that point to events beyond the eyes. As a teacher, he had taken discipline as one thing that should not be toyed with. He was in one school when some of his pupils, who seemed to disagree with his seeming wet blanket attitude, sent him to court. It was not a normal court, but he was summoned. How did he appear in the court? We take an excerpt from his writings on the things visible and invisible.
Issues relating to the invisible are better experienced than described or explained. What I'm about to relate was something I experienced probably at a higher level of consciousness, but directly linked with matters on the ground. That sounds weird, isn't it? I was a teacher, a young teacher, with my sights higher than teaching. I was not only determined to push towards a better future for myself, but also resolved that the children who passed through my hands were sufficiently inspired to work harder for greater achievement in life. Of course, that demanded hard work and discipline, without which progress could hardly be achieved. Fortunately, the first school to which I was posted, Takrady Anglican School, offered good training. It was a new school, and the head teacher, the late K.O. Asan, an Achimota-trained teacher, had laid the solid foundation for discipline and hard work. And the pupils were so responsive, I found that inspiring. After 3 years, I was transferred from Takrady to Second D. That was a two-stream boys' school. There was plenty of boys and plenty of indiscipline too. So, right from day one, I had to institute strict measures if I would not flop there. These measures had to do with lateness, talkativeness, untidiness, rudeness, quarrelsomeness, and fighting. One other measure was this. The school broke for lunch at 12 noon and resumed at 2 in the afternoon. As the school was out of town, the pupils bought food on the premises. Then they spent the rest of the time playing football. Between 12 and 2, the sun was at its hottest, so the boys returned to the classroom dirty and sweat-drenched, accompanied by a complex of volume of disagreeable body odors. I just could not stand that. I introduced this rule. All playing should stop at 30 minutes before time to allow them not only to clean up and cool down, but also to enable them to do their corrections before class started. The arrangement was good, and many of the boys appreciated the wisdom in it. But of course, not everybody liked the productive orderliness, especially the lazy and stupid chaps. I could sense their resentment. Of course, offenders smelt pepper. In those days, the cane played an effective remedial role for incorrigible chaps. Wisely administered, caning was effective. Things seemed to be moving in the right direction until I had that mysterious dream. Was it real or my own imagination? Let us see. I dreamt I was in some kind of a courtroom at a location I could not identify. It was a full court. There was that robed judge swallowed in a huge justice throne. There was a jury, all robed like choristers. There was the prosecution bench, and there was the defense bench. It looked quite weird. There was the dock, and the accused was in the dock. The accused was identified as Teacher Kofi Bentum Kwanson Esquire of Axim, but then domiciled at the harbor city of Takrady. I surveyed the scene and was mystified. What's going on? Somehow, I could not identify any face immediately, but I was on trial. Soon, the trial started, and I could then identify the prosecutor. Wonder and amazement, he was one of the boys in my class. Stupid, dirty, troublesome, he was prosecuting, and what an opening address. It was scathing and condemnatory. That I was a bad man, that since I came to the school, I had become a killjoy. I had been terrorizing them, punishing them at the least opportunity. Why would they not be allowed to play until when classes should actually begin? On and on and on, he ranted, painting the accused Kofi Bentum Kwanson Esquire of Axim, but domiciled at Takrady in the blackest of colors. After that, dear tribe, he dropped the bombshell. The jury should convict me, and the judge should sentence me to death. Yes, death. Then he sat down, casting a murderous glance at me, like I was some kind of a dangerous scorpion that should be crushed under an iron boot. I stood there, calm, unafraid. I knew that I was capable of vanishing if it came to being seized to be executed. Of that, I was cocksure. My spiritual defense was strong. The armor I wore was divine. There was no way the forces of evil could penetrate that shining armor. The wonders continued. On the other side, an attorney rose up and announced himself for the defense. And man, didn't he defend me? He sure did. He debunked all that the prosecutor had said. He explained the beneficial effects of the measures I had instituted. Then he asked the pivotal question, quote, "The measures being taken, for whose benefit are they? When we pass our exams and obtain our certificates, are we going to hang them in Teacher Kwanson's room? Is it the bad, stupid, and lazy chap who hate Teacher Kwanson? They are very few, and they include my learned friend on the other side." I cannot remember what the judge said, and I cannot quite remember how the dream ended, but I woke up rather bemused. This is a strange world. The strangeness was manifested the next morning when I went to school. Absolutely incredible. Very uncharacteristically, the first person I met was the learned counsel who defended me at the Wizard's Witch's trial the previous night. He was one of the brightest boys, neat and well-behaved. He greeted me with a sweet victory smile. Our eyes met, and there was a secret recognition of something, a secret that did not require discussion. It was not meant for a three-dimensional world of flesh and blood. It was meant for higher dimension of soul, spirit, and further. That was not all. When classes started, I saw one of the boys looking visibly unwell. He was shivering and sweating. I called him to find out what was wrong. He said he was not well and wanted to go home. I looked hard at him, very hard. It was a piercing look that deeply burned into his wicked soul. He was my prosecutor at the trial the previous night, and he knew he had been exposed. I got a taxi to take him home. That ended his schooling. He never returned. Strange world indeed. Surely, people are not what they look or what they seem. They could be more than they look. If you think there is nothing in this world, go and read what St. Paul wrote, and I quote, that our fight is not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, unquote. I used to ask myself this question in those days. What would have happened to me if I had been sentenced to death and sentence was executed? Probably, I would have died in my sleep and people would find me dead in the morning. But the fact was that I was not in the least bothered as the proceedings went on. I had the full assurance that I had the spiritual capacity to frustrate the devils and disappear. Why? Because the Lord is my light and my salvation, whom shall I fear? Because the Lord is the strength of my life, therefore the sun shall not burn me by day, neither the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve me from all evil. The Lord shall preserve my soul. The armor that I wear is divine. Therefore, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life.
That was an excerpt from the book Things Visible and Invisible by Kofi Bentum Kwanson, the eminent securocrat. Things really do happen. And that is where we wrap it all up for today. As mentioned, Perspectives is available as podcast on GBC Online. Just go to gbcghana.com. Log on to podcast and you are there. You can reach us with your comments at K Obinchere if you are on Twitter, at K Obinchere or at the GBC Ghana, at K Obinchere or at the GBC Ghana. Your text and WhatsApp line is 0244-538-168. 0244-538-168. On behalf of Joyce Jechi, I am Kingsley Obinchere once again saying, please keep the peace and be our guest same time next week, God willing.